Hello, and welcome to episode 13 of the Dean's Podcast, the podcast about issues shaping graduate studies in Canada. I'm Carolyn Waters, Dean of Graduate Studies at Dalhousie University, past president of the Canadian Association of Graduate Studies, CAGS. In this issue, I catch up with Tom Erickson at a conference in Hawaii, and we talk about his life as a telecommuter. Tom is an interaction designer and researcher at IBM, and a pioneer in the art of telecommuting to work. By simply switching on his home computer and picking up the phone, he's already at the office. Using a variety of tools, he coordinates projects, attends meetings around the world. But listen in as he explains the good, the bad, and the ugly of being a telecommuter, and gives some great practical advice to those of you who might be considering this as a career route. Welcome back. I'm Carolyn Waters. I'm here with Tom Erickson at the HICS conference in lovely Hawaii. And Tom is one of the few people I know who actually doesn't commute to work every day. And he's been doing this as long as I've known him. So I'm hoping that Tom will talk to us about that today. So welcome, Tom.
Well, where to start? I guess maybe to give a little bit of history of my telecommuting experience. It started in 1993. I was working at Apple. My wife got a job in Minnesota. We decided to move to Minnesota. Apple wanted me to keep working for them, and so we arranged to, for me to try telecommuting as an experiment. And the experiment essentially worked across a couple of managers, some organizational change.
But Tom, when you started that, what kind of technology was there?
What kind of technology? It was pretty much telephone and email as far as sending things back and forth. And one thing I remember doing is when I first started working remotely, my group would have a meeting and sometimes they'd forget to call me. And so one thing I initially made very frequent visits back, and so I made a little picture of myself, stuck it on a lump of clay, and put my phone number on it, and I stuck it on the group phone in the conference room.
And did that work?
That actually worked pretty well. They go in the room, there's my picture, there's a phone number, everything they need. I also did some experiments with a sort of HyperCard stack I could control remotely, and I could bring up a little sort of, now we'd say an avatar of myself on the screen, and I could raise my hand, or the avatar could leave the table and leave a coffee cup behind, which is my first solution to one of the vexing problems of being a telecommuter, which is, what do you do when you're participating in a meeting by phone, everybody else is in the room, and you need to step out for a restroom break? On the one hand, I really don't like to announce to the whole room that I need a break. And on the other hand, if I just leave...
Tom, where are you?
Exactly. Yes, it never fails. The big problem in remote work is not working with the people you work with. The big problem in remote work is the peripheral interaction you have with people that you don't see for some purpose. You know, this is almost a truism now, I think, but it's the hallway conversations. You bump into somebody in the cafeteria, you get to chatting, you come up with some ideas, and something new results from that. And when you're remote, that kind of serendipitous or opportunistic interaction is somewhere between more difficult. If they're people you're acquainted with, you can sort of come up with substitutes, but if they're people you randomly run into that you don't know, there's no way to do that. Right, or never run into.
So now you're working for IBM, and you're still in Minneapolis, and where's the main office?
The main office is in New York, so I like to say when I switch jobs, I cut 500 miles and half an hour off my commute.
So how often do you go to New York?
Again, when I started at IBM, for the first 6 months, I think I went out every other week because mostly I didn't know people there. And IBM was very savvy about how they approached this, and they knew I needed to build up a network.
Now, was 6 months long enough? Do you think it's one of these things where every couple of years you need to go back for a few months?
Well,
like a reverse sabbatical?
So the way it worked is the first 6 months I went out every other week, and then we just kind of gradually ramped off. And so until we had our little economy crisis, I had sort of stabilized it going out about once a month for 3 or 4 days. So in the last year, I've only been out twice, which is...
So how's that working for you?
That doesn't feel like quite enough. And again, mainly because I lose the sort of opportunistic interaction, but also because, again, because of my situation, when I go out, it's not just to sit in the office with people, and you have different kind of conversations than you would on the phone.
Right. Or in a business meeting.
Or in a business meeting.
So now that you're at IBM, do you see this, this was mainly the solution to a two-body problem.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So if you were starting out new, a brand new PhD, is this the way you would want to start?
No. It's a hard way to start out, because especially when you're just starting out either as a new PhD or, you know, starting out in a new job, you really need to build up that network of people, right? And even though I was coming into IBM as a new person, I was well established in my profession, and so I knew how a lot of things were done.
You knew everybody.
And people knew of me if they didn't know me personally. So
what about all this new technology I see, like the stuff we see with, you know, interactive screens and network rooms? Do you use any of that?
I use some of it. So I guess one bit of context to add in is that IBM is a global company, and a lot of our teams are global. So most of the meetings I'm not the only one who's dialed in. In fact, I'm in quite a lot of meetings where virtually everyone is dialed in.
So do they all have a little clay clump with their picture?
No. Now our shared calendaring system really takes care of that more. So conferencing and some way to share a screen or slides is... very, very useful for meetings, and we use that a lot.
Is it predicated on having met most of those people in person before or not?
No, most of the teams I'm on, the bulk of the people I've never met in person.
Yeah. So at this point, you're not actually not commuting even?
I'm not commuting very much.
Because they're not.
Right.
It's not, there's nowhere to commute to.
Right.
Well,
and, you know, also a meeting I just set up this morning has people from Haifa, the east coast of the U.S., Minneapolis, myself, California, and the Netherlands, right? And so, and that's going to be a weekly meeting, but, you know, no way everybody could ever actually commute to the same place.
Yeah, so one of the larger problems is, you know, instead of when do we go for coffee, is what time zone do we decide to meet in? So we've actually shifted a lot of our constraints. So do you have any advice on how do you decide whose turn it is and things like that?
That's kind of a tough one. A lot of it depends on the balance in the meeting, right? So if you have, you know, if 75% of your people are, you know, within a few time zones of one another, and you've got two people from, you know, 12 hours off, I've never seen anyone try to be fair enough to say, well, we're going to, you know, make 75% of the people get up at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
And I think the folks in the remote places pretty much understand that.
Sort of suck it up and get up at 2?
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing I've seen done is if it's a big meeting, I've seen people hold two versions of the same meeting, you know, one early in the day and one late in the day so they can accommodate people globally. The other thing I'd say is if you're structured enough, you can make pretty good progress asynchronously. It requires more planning and more laying out of the various tasks to do, but...
Well, sometimes I find if a teleconference gets more than 5 or 6 people, it would be faster to be sending email around because you end up with sort of everybody making a statement that wasn't really necessary, and if they were in person, they wouldn't bother to have made that statement. So I don't know if that holds in business meetings.
No, I definitely say that holds. And a couple of other... just on the thought of meetings, there's a particular type of meeting that I call a hybrid meeting, where you have a bunch of people in the same room, and then you have other people calling in. And I think those are some of the most difficult meetings for remote people, because the people who are in the same room can communicate much more easily and facilely than those remote. And so one thing we've actually tried as experiments is banning hybrid meetings. And even if people are in the same building on the same hallway, they all call in from their office phone just like the remote people do.
So if you're a remote person, how do you get your turn at saying something? Like, how do you, especially if there are more senior people and junior people. So if you're the junior faculty member, in a meeting you get agitated and start putting up your hand, but in a remote thing it's more difficult. So how do you deal with that?
Yeah, that's another tough one. I mean, some of our screen sharing software allows you to raise an analog of your hand, but typically that doesn't work very well in the systems I've used, because the hand raising thing is not very noticeable. The thing that works best is for there to be enough structure that there's always a time for everyone to speak, which is problematic if the meeting is large. The thing that works the very best is you have a savvy leader who knows remote people have a hard time getting in and will call on them or make a space. Do the remote people want to say anything now? The other thing that can work very well is if you do have a hybrid meeting, if you can use chat to back channel to somebody in the room. So I can say, oh, I was thinking about this to a colleague.
That's what I do when I Skype to my lab group. I ask one student to have the chat on there, and when I get agitated, like I really want to say something, she'll say, Carolyn wants to speak. Yeah. So that's interesting. So it sounds as though there would also be a practice or a best practice around chairing one of these meetings when people are remote. Do you have any insight on that?
Well, let's see. Besides making space for remote people to talk, asking people who speak, and this is a really hard one to make happen, but getting people to identify themselves when they speak, because that's hard for remote people. They want to know who's talking. Making sure that materials for the meeting are available in advance, or if not, making sure they get around at least when they're needed. I think officially designating someone as who's local as a sort of designated back channeler is a really good process, because that's good for debugging technology problems, for getting the questions asked, and so on.
Yeah. That the notion of an agenda must be even more important in these meetings.
Agendas are certainly helpful. It depends on the kind of meeting. In some meetings you can, work out a well-structured agenda ahead of time. Others, it's harder to do.
Well, I guess via brainstorming, that's not going to work very well.
Right.
Agenda item one.
Yeah.
Think.
And brainstorming is really hard to do remotely over the phone.
That's interesting. Pick your battles, in a sense.
Yeah. If I were doing remote brainstorming, I'd try to do it all online in a chat channel, something like that.
Okay.
I do have, so we've been talking a lot about meetings and, sort of focused intentional work. And since your audience are people who may end up considering, doing telecommuting in their career, I thought I'd say a few things about things to think about if you're going to enter into a telecommuting situation. So one thing is to think about yourself and how you feel about working remotely. So I'm the sort of person where if I have an email exchange with somebody, I actually feel like I've spoken with them. Or if I have a chat session with somebody, I feel like I've had a real interaction.
I have to interrupt here. Tom is a very sociable guy.
But, initially my wife would always come home from, and say, well, did you talk to anybody today? And I'd really have to think carefully, well, did I actually talk on the phone? No, it was just all email. But it felt good to me. And I know there are other people who really need either the face-to-face or the voice contact. And so you need to understand where you are in that spectrum and whether you'll be happy, essentially. A second thing to keep in mind is that when you're a telecommuter in a group, at least a group that's co-located, some aspects of the work that you would normally do get offloaded onto your local colleagues. So if there's a political crisis, if there's unpleasantness, they often get pulled in to do it, and you're not there, so you escape. And so you need to be very conscious about making sure that you have ways of paying your dues in the group. And there are some things that people who are remote can do more effectively. So, you know, it's often easier to get time to write things. So, you know, if something dull needs to get written up,
yeah. Or sometimes getting the first draft out.
Or getting the first draft out.
Need somebody who can actually just do it.
Or, you know, or take notes during the meeting, right? If you're there at your computer, take notes, share them, right? Doing things like that so that the local people are both helping you out by doing their thing, but they're also getting benefit from your remoteness. Think first about how it works for you. Think second about how it works for the group you would be joining. And that's a good thing to discuss in interviewing situations. And then the third thing is to think about how telecommute ready the organization you're joining is.
And don't be the first.
Well, if you're the first, you're a pioneer. And I'd say there are at least two things to think about. So one is, how ready is the organizational culture to accommodate telecommuting? So Apple was not very... Apple was mostly, you know, all based in the Bay Area, and they didn't really have a culture of remote meetings. IBM, on the other hand, being so vastly distributed, and in fact, I think our current statistic is on any given day about mid 40% of IBM employees are not working from a traditional office. Some of them are consultants who are out at a client site, but a lot of people work full-time from home. And so that's good news for telecommuters, because you don't worry about a meeting starting and people forgetting that they're remote people, because they're almost
always
are. Protocols
are there, and expectations are already set.
You know, and most conference rooms have good speaker phones, not crappy speaker phones, and that's really, really important. So that's one thing to think about with regard to the organization. The second thing to think about is how it's going to work for you in terms of a career path, because as you join an organization and move through it, it's important for you and your work to be visible in some sense. And if you're remote, that's something that you need to consciously work at. You can't be shy. You need to popularize yourself, you know, or not popularize, but publicize yourself. That's what I was trying to say. It's also very useful if you have a manager who is very good at making sure that other people know that you're around and even volunteering you for things.
What about feedback? So performance feedback, is that something that the telecommuter needs to sort of set up and make sure that they're included in that, or would you suggest you do that when you show up in person?
Well, IBM has a pretty sort of standard mechanism for
universities
feedback.
Are notoriously bad at this bit.
Yeah, no. IBM does it pretty religiously, and we have a very structured process. And I guess the only thing I'd say is, if you're just starting out and, you know, in your first stages of telecommuting, it's probably worth getting feedback, not just from your manager, but from your colleagues.
Yeah.
You know, how is this working for
everyone?
So be
a little more proactive in the gaining of the feedback as you get started, because you don't want to be blindsided 3 months down and say, well, nobody even knew I was there.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You know, or people are, you know, slowly graduate, you know, developing resentments because...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you didn't know about
that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
exactly. Excellent. So overall, you're happy that you've done this?
I am. It's worked out very well for my life. I get to live with my wife, which is
a bonus.
A great thing. I live in a nice neighborhood. This is another upside of telecommuting is, I think, as we see more and more people shifting into telecommuting, I think it may change the sort of urban dynamics quite a bit, because you'll have, you know, now we talk about, you have suburbs that are bedroom communities, right, where everybody leaves and drives off to the office. Think how it will change things in the future when people, you know, a lot of people aren't driving off to the office, they're just getting online.
Walking down to the corner Starbucks is
exactly
what they're doing.
Yeah, and there are a lot of public or semi-public spaces where solo telecommuters can go and hang out with other people who are in the same situation, you know. that's the coffee.
So a place like IBM, in fact, could foster that notion. So the three people in Minnesota could, or Minneapolis could have a little spot where they might meet every now and then for coffee and kind of build up local nodes of you know, social networking.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So I think we're going to see more of this, and I'm hoping some of our young listeners will pick up on your best practices and let us know how it works. So thank you very much, Tom.
You're most welcome. Thank you.
That's it for this episode. If you'd like to get in touch with me about something you heard on this podcast or about an issue that you'd like to see covered, please email me at carolyn.waters@dal.ca. You can also leave a comment at the bottom of the page where this podcast is posted at universityaffairs.ca. Until next time, I'm Carolyn Waters, and thanks for listening.